Welcome back to Ryan and Brian's Bible Bistro. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Brian.
This is the Bible Bistro
podcast. Hello.
Hello, Bobby. Bobbins. Here we are. Cheerio. If you're in England and you hate our voices, let us know.
Is our accent better or worse than Dick Van Dyke's?
Yes. Yes. He's from Danville, Illinois.
Danville, Illinois. So is Gene Hackman. That was a fact I mentioned to somebody yesterday.
Yes. And
so is Dick Van Dyke's brother. It's also from Danville, Illinois.
Okay.
He was coach in Cheers.
That's right. I remember this.
Okay. So welcome back to another episode of the Bible Bistro.
Welcome back to Rain in Faxville.
All about trivia, Danville trivia. Danville, Illinois.
Yes, absolutely. Shout out to Greg in Danville. Anyway, they've got a casino now.
So I hear.
It's great. Just what that town needed. So we are continuing Revelation. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
We're a little rusty here, folks. We're getting back into this here.
It's been a long week.
It has been a long week for both of us. So we're finishing up, or maybe potentially we're seeing where we're at. But we're moving on to the fifth and sixth trumpets
of the book of Revelation. So we looked at the seven seals, and then we saw how the seventh seal kind of melds into the trumpets. Mm-hmm. We looked at the first four trumpets last week, and then we get this woe. I mentioned it last week, but we'll talk about it a little bit more. There are three different woes that come.
Go ahead
and read chapter 8, verse 13, the very last verse there. So,
as I watched, I heard an angel that was flying in midair call out.
That's an eagle.
What did I say?
Angel.
I apologize. I heard an eagle, I know how to read, that was flying in midair call out in a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth because of the trumpet blast about to be sounded by the other three angels."
So, there's kind of a precedent for us to deal with these first four together. Then we have this kind of break. Eagle, it says in the midst of the heavens, and this is the kind of the idea of, it depends on how you understand ancient cosmology, the way you think the world is put together. But it's this idea, midair is what the NIV says, but literally it's midst the heavens. And so a lot of times, Paul even talks about this idea of the third heaven. So a lot of times we see kind of the firmament or the sky as being the second heaven. So this eagle is flying and is saying woes. And woe is a prophetic statement. It's something you see in the prophets in the Old Testament. We don't go around saying that too much, right? In The Princess Bride, maybe, but you don't walk around going "Woe to you," that kind of thing.
Whoa.
But you may say that, but woe is kind of a warning about judgment. It's a prophetic statement, mm-hmm. right? To say that there's this bad thing about to happen to you. Woe to you. Maybe it almost sounds like a Shakespearean character, right? Something like mm-hmm. that. And so this angel pronounces three woes. It talks about that there are two other woes about to come. And it's talking about the judgment that's going to be brought with these last three trumpets. So again, you see there's kind of break. The first four trumpets we've talked about in these final three. Eagles, I guess we could talk about a little bit. Eagles, the interesting thing is eagles were one of the symbols of Rome. Like the Roman legions carried eagle standards at the front of their legions, and so it could be a play on that. We've talked before about eagles; they're soaring and they kind of have this idea of they see everything. They're able to kind of soar above it all and see everything. So it could have that kind of an idea of almost God's omniscience is the other possibility that we have going on here. But anyway, this eagle is the one who's announcing these warnings about future judgment that's about to happen. So then in chapter 9, we have the fifth trumpet of these seven that sounds. So go ahead and just read verses 1 and 2. And we're going to see some similar language to what we saw with a third trumpet, but go ahead and read verses 1 and 2.
The fifth angel, not an eagle, the fifth angel sounded his trumpet, and I saw a star that had fallen from the sky to the earth. The star was given the key to the shaft of the abyss. When he opened the abyss, smoke rose from it like the smoke from a gigantic furnace. The sun and sky were darkened by the smoke from the abyss.
Okay, a lot going on here, a lot to talk about. So the fifth angel sounds, and there's a star that falls. And you might remember we had a star back in the third trumpet. We said stars are sometimes used for these idea of angels, and the idea of a fallen angel would probably indicate, you know, this kind of thing. Because the star acts, right, begins to do things. He is given, for example, a key to the abyss. And so the question then, this is debated in different commentaries, is this a good angel or a bad angel, right?
Right.
Fallen angel typically, or fallen star here, typically would indicate that this is bad. Is an evil one, right? But it's kind of confusing because this angel is given the key. And keys are usually kind of associated with authority, given authority over the abyss. We'll come back and talk about the abyss here in just a minute. But that's one of the questions we have. Now, if we skip down, I'm going to skip down a little bit into verse 11. Just read verse 11 for me of chapter 9. Here the book of Revelation gives us a little bit more information about this angel.
They had as king over them the angel of the abyss, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon and in Greek is Apollyon.
So
Apollyon or whatever.
Apollyon, which means destruction.
Destroyer.
Destroyer. And Abaddon means destruction in Hebrew. So, you know, that kind of imagery, again, destruction, destroyer would probably indicate an evil, you know, not a creator, but a destroyer. So that this angel is given the key is the sign of authority. Keys are signs of authority. Back in Revelation chapter 1, verse 18, there it says, Jesus says to John, this is when John first is encountered by Jesus, he falls down like a dead person. Jesus puts his hand on him and says, one of the things he says is, I was dead, now I am alive, I've been given the key to death and Hades, right? In other words, I've been given authority over death and Hades. And so it's a similar kind of idea. That's the reason some people see this as good. If they see this as a good angel, a good actor, let's call him, it could be that he is descending. But that doesn't seem to be the way the language is. And again, it's very similar. It's very similar to this wormwood star that we talked about in the last, the bitter star we talked about in the last episode. So the abyss, let's talk a little bit about this. It literally is the idea of a hole, but a limitless hole or a bottomless pit, we might say, or sometimes it's translated as pit. Abyss is really just kind of a transliteration of the Greek word. The Greek word is abysson, right? And so just the idea of abyss. We get from this, and it was seen as a place of chaos, a place from which evil comes. It's the idea of entrance into the realm of the dead or the abode of the dead. Can you skip back to Romans 10:7 real quick and just the word abyss is used there. Jesus uses the word abyss as well, but Paul here, I think the way that Paul uses it gives us some idea about what's going on here. Romans 10:7.
Romans 10:7. Or who will descend into the deep, that is, to bring Christ up from the dead?
Yeah, so the word dead there is literally abyss, from the abyss, bring Christ up from the abyss. So this idea of the entrance into the Holy Land, entrance into the abode of the dead is kind of the idea of what's going on. And so he has authority, he has control over it. But what happens when he opens it is this idea that the smoke, like smoke from a gigantic furnace, comes up. And you know, this, it's a dark smoke, it causes darkness. This is kind of thing. I want to say a few things about this. The first is the gigantic furnace, right?
Yes.
And so what do you think of when you think of furnaces? I mean, this isn't like a furnace in your house, but go ahead.
With a lot of smoke coming up from it?
A gigantic furnace. What's your favorite gigantic furnace story?
My favorite gigantic furnace story. I don't know if I have...
The one I think of is actually from another apocalyptic book. It's from the book of Daniel.
Ah, yes.
Do you remember the fiery furnace there? Okay. Yeah. So, there you go. The fiery furnace.
It's my favorite furnace.
It's your favorite gigantic furnace story. It was big enough to put at least three guys in, right?
Four.
And you, well, there was a, they put three in. There was a fourth one in.
Fourth
in. Them.
Yeah.
But that whole idea of, you know, this furnace was a place of judgment, right? Or a place of punishment, we could say, destruction, if we want to use that phrase that we see with their word that we see connected with the name of this angel. And so this idea that this furnace is there and the smoke that goes up from it is dark smoke. And here's the reason I'm going to be talking about invading armies a lot in the next little bit. Mm-hmm. When you think about the destruction of a city, when you think about an army coming in and destroying a city, this idea of smoke going up and burning as a part of that is an image that we can put together. We've already seen burning a lot. If you remember those first four trumpets, we talked about that burning as a sign of judgment.
Yep.
So, you know, I guess what's the saying? Where there's smoke, there's fire.
There's fire. Right? Yep.
Where there's fire, there's smoke. I guess we're saying here that the smoke is a sign in the distance. Like if you're in the ancient world and you're walking down a pathway toward a village, and you see smoke in the distance, you're going to be like, oh my goodness, there's something wrong. There's a problem. Mm-hmm. It even can go with what we've seen earlier with the darkness and the sun being darkened. If you think about the sky being turned to blood, moon to blood, often the particles of smoke in the air can cause this kind of thing. So again, it could be a sign in the natural world of this idea of destruction. And I think that's part of what's going on. As we go in this next verse, well, any comments or questions first you wanted to bring in before we get to this next part?
Nope, I don't think so.
So this is verses 3 through 6 then that talk about something that comes out of this smoke. So the smoke goes up out of the abyss, out of the bottomless pit, the abode of the dead, and then there is something that comes out of this smoke. So that's verses 3 through 6.
Sounds like the movie or the show Lost, where the smoke monster comes out.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, it could be something like that.
No, it's not, but just made me think of that. All right, so read verses 3 through 6 here.
Please, yeah.
And out of the smoke, locusts came down on the earth and were given power like that of scorpions of the earth. They were told not to harm the grass of the earth or any plant or tree, but only those people who did not have the seal of God on their foreheads. They were not allowed to kill them, but only to torture them for 5 months. And the agony they suffered was like that of the sting of a scorpion when it strikes. During those days, people will seek death, but will not find it. They will long to die, but death will elude them.
Okay, go ahead and look at Luke 10 while we're preparing for this. But this idea that locusts come out of this smoke, right? And locust swarms are often associated with judgment. Let's go to the Exodus. Let's go to the plagues again, right? Mm-hmm. And locusts is one of those plagues, the locust plague. These are different locusts, though, for a couple of different reasons.
Scorpion, flying, they're scorpion like scorpions. Locusts.
I mean, you know, and you say scorpion locust. Interesting thing is there are some people who want to read Revelation in a very, I want to say this, that John was trying to describe things that he was going to actually, he actually had a vision of in the future. So they would say hybrid animals, this kind of thing, possibly. I don't think that's what's going on here. But it
these
will
are
bring
GMO
up,
animals.
Exactly. It's going to bring up, as we read down through this description, it's going to bring up lots of images. And again, when we think about the pictures together, I think it's going to become clear what's going on here. At this point, it isn't necessarily clear. But that these locusts are different than the ones in Exodus is immediately obvious, and not only because they're like scorpions, but they're specifically told not to harm the vegetation, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas the locust plague, and that's typically the judgment that comes with a locust plague, is typically it has to do with eating up all of the crops, right? That's what happened to the Egyptians, is any of the crops that were left after the hailstorm, the locust came and it says it just picked it dry. Modern locust swarms, you still see these in parts of North Africa and other places. Modern locust swarms, you know, can just strip a place bare. We have a couple of examples in the Old Testament of these kind of things. And I'll mention Joel 2 here in just a little bit. But this idea of Luke chapter 10. We talked about the seal on their foreheads as well. But read Luke 10, 18 through 20 for me real quick.
He replied, "I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. I have given you authority to trample on snakes and scorpions and to overcome all the power of the enemy. Nothing will harm you. However, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven."
So these locusts that sting like scorpions were said to harm those who did not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And this idea of you'll be able to trample on scorpions, right? Anybody who's not, who's marked, you know, there's nothing that's going to harm them. This is the kind of, there reminds us of that kind of language. These scorpions are not going to harm God's people. Even going back to Exodus, we've talked before about the distinction that God made between the land of Goshen and the land of Egypt and the harm that came to the Egyptians, but not to God's people, the Israelites. So again, this is judgment that's reserved for those who don't have the seal of God on their foreheads. So locusts that sting like scorpions and cause anguish. Now, scorpion stings, I understand, I've never had one, do cause a lot of anguish. I know some, I've talked to a guy who served in Desert Storm, and that was one of the things that they had to watch for because scorpions love to get in their boots, apparently. And so they were taught to, you know, make sure their boots were, they were, you know, scorpion free before they put their feet in it. But I guess the sting of a scorpion is a very painful, you know, worse than a wasp sting or hornet sting, something like that. And so I think that we get this image of anguish, but it's anguish. This 5 months is very troubling. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's kind of an odd, odd idea. And the best explanation, I don't have a great explanation. The best explanation is that 5 months is usually the period of time in which a locust swarm could take place. So some people see this as kind of the time when they would harm crops and this kind of thing. And so it may be associated with that idea. You know, people had an idea about when locusts would come, that this is the idea the locusts are going to be there for the entire 5 month period, during which, you know, locusts normally could come. They would be there for that entire time. It's interesting, though, they're talking about anguish but not bringing death, right? This is more like a torture or a punishment, something along those lines. And it said they would even wish for death, but they you know, couldn't achieve death is the idea. So this is you know, punishment upon those who don't have the seal of God on their foreheads. Later on, we're going to see those are the ones who are marked, as you often point out, with the sign of the beast. So other thoughts, other questions or comments on that?
I mean, so should we still think of this in like, like those, I mean, we've talked about Rome a little bit and some of this stuff. Like this is like, you know, kind of like this is a fall of Rome. People are going to wish it was over, but it's not.
I think so. You're laying down what I'm, or you're picking up what I'm laying down here. I think we're heading toward talking about some of the difficulties that Rome is going to experience in the future. I think that's what we're given an image of here. So go ahead and read verses 7 through 11. I know I ask if there are any questions, but I think this will help because this is still talking about the same part of this. So just read those verses.
"The locusts looked like horses prepared for battle. On their heads they wore something like crowns of gold, and their faces resembled human faces. Their hair was like women's hair, and their teeth were like lion's teeth. They had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the thundering of many horses and chariots rushing into battle. They had tails with stingers like scorpions, and in their tails they had the power to torment people for 5 months."
Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and tell you what this is not.
Is this Apache helicopters?
No. So, what you're referring to is Hal Lindsey. Hal Lindsey, he wrote a book he wrote several books, but he wrote a book back in the 70s called Late Great Planet Earth. But then there's another book that he wrote later that takes these as referring to attack helicopters, something along those lines. I don't think that's what it is. People who take that viewpoint are saying that John was describing things that were beyond his ability. And he is using descriptors here of like, right? Mm-hmm. Now, here's where I think this is going to help us kind of see the language that John is using here, is locusts are often compared to armies. We see this kind of comparison frequently. I thought I could look it up. I shut off my phone. I was having some trouble with interference with my phone and the microphone here a little while ago, so I've shut it off. But so I can't look this up. Look up Joel 2 for me. I was going to look this up. I'm having you do all the reading today.
Yeah.
And you can actually start in 1 if you want and read down through verse 5. Okay. This is talking about a literal locust plague. This is judgment that's coming upon God's people because of their unfaithfulness. And it is talking about literal locust plague here.
Yeah. Yeah. Blow the trumpet in Zion, sound the alarm on my holy hill. Let all who live in the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming. It is close at hand. A day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and blackness. Like dawn spreading across the mountains, a large and mighty army comes, such as never was in ancient times, nor ever will be in ages to come. Before them fire devours, behind them a flame blazes. Before them the land is like the Garden of Eden, behind them a desert waste. Nothing escapes them. They have the appearance of horses. They gallop along like cavalry. With a noise like that of chariots, they leap over the mountaintops like a crackling fire, consuming stubble, like a mighty army drawn up for battle.
So this is talking about locusts, but you see the comparison with armies here that's being made. So if you've ever seen, again, a locust plague, it covers the land like it does. You can go on and look on YouTube videos if you want to see an actual locust plague. So you can see this comparison with armies, but the interesting thing in Revelation is you see a lot of similar imagery here, right? The smoke and the fire and all this kind of stuff.
Because they're trying to burn out in front of it, right? So it would stop coming towards them?
Yeah, and it says it's like the Garden of Eden in front of them, but behind them it's like desert. So they're coming through and they're just stripping all the vegetation out. And again, Joel is talking about a literal locust plague, and he says later that God is going to repay, you know, when they repent, when they turn back to him, God is going to repay them for the years that the locusts have eaten. But so it's talking about a literal locust swarm here, a literal locust plague. But here, locusts are frequently compared to armies, but I think we're here wondering if these are locusts that are like armies, or they're armies that are like locusts. Okay. And what I mean is, if you look at the rest of those descriptions, they're very interesting. So it says they have crowns like gold that they're wearing. They have hair like women's hair. Right? Isn't that what it says? Something to that effect. Yep.
Their hair was like women's hair.
Right. So these are really weird locusts. So some people think this is referring like to locust antennas, something along those lines. But I think it's talking about a people that had, because this is human. Their faces were like human faces, right? Mm-hmm. And my favorite description here. This sounds like something I would write. John says their breastplates were like breastplates. You know, like. Okay.
Of iron.
But breastplates of iron, right? Probably referring to kind of the carapace of locusts. You know, they have this hard
exoskeleton.
Outer shell. And it's compared to armor, right? It's like a breastplate. But this is a description, I think, of Scythians, okay? Which were kind of we've talked before, they were kind of the bogeyman of the ancient world, right? They were the people.
They were east of the Euphrates, correct?
Exactly. A+ today. Because just keep that in mind, right?
Okay.
So they were on the other side of Euphrates. This is why Rome went that far and no farther, right? This is why that's the frontier, right? End of the world, geographically. And they were the people that the Romans feared would come and battle them. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the interesting thing, because it talks about they're like horses arrayed for battle. The Scythians were well known for being an army that rode horses. And the thing that they had mastered, I think I've mentioned this before, they had mastered the ability to use their arrows, bow and arrow, while they're riding their horses. So in other words, they're not holding reins. They're directing the horses with their legs, which allowed them the freedom to shoot these arrows like stingers, right? Mm-hmm. And even there's a phrase called the Scythian shot, which is the idea of they were able to shoot behind them even. So mm-hmm. both in the front and in the back is the image that you have there, both in the tail and in the mouth, then they're able to sting. Just this description, I think, is really using the image. It's ironic. It's kind of turning that metaphor of locusts like an army into armies like locusts, right? So this mm-hmm. image of locusts, they're kind of going back, I think, into this idea of armies. Scythians were known for their long hair, their hair like women's hair, like not the way you wore it in Rome, right? The mm-hmm. way that the barbarians wear it. They had helmets that they wore into battle, armor that they wore into battle, and so I think that's the image that we have going on here. Faces like human faces. I think we're thinking about an actual army. So what would this have to do with what this trumpet of judgment and the 5 months coming upon the enemies of God's people? Again, remember, Rome are the oppressors during this period of time. So it's not that the Christians are hoping for the fall of Rome, right? It's not that they're hoping for the Scythians, but it's God's promise that this judgment will come upon those who are harming God's people. That judgment will come upon them as well. Very similar image to what we see in the Old Testament with Babylon, for example, or in Babylon's the best example, but Assyria would work as well. God says to his people, when they're facing judgment, I'm bringing the Babylonians, Habakkuk, for example, other Isaiah, Jeremiah. I'm bringing the Babylonians, but there is coming a time where judgment will come upon the Babylonians as well. And so I think that relates to this idea of the Romans are oppressing God's people, but I am bringing others who will bring judgment upon the Romans, that they will face their defeat as well, is what's going on here. Gotcha. Other thoughts, other ideas.
I mean, again, we've kind of talked about this, kind of this cycle. We talked about this with the horsemen, with the four horsemen of the apocalypse, mm-hmm. of the, you know, one of the horsemen had a bow and arrow, you know, and it,
invasions, right?
Yeah. Invasion,
invading.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And that the Scythians are, you know, that was one of the things that they were known for, their ability to ride and to shoot at the same time. Yep.
Yep. Cool. I can't do that.
So verse 12 is now another one of these kind of interludes with the woes. So go mm-hmm. ahead and read verse 12 for me.
The first woe was past. Two other woes are yet to come.
So again, just a way to kind of show the progression here that's going on. I'm going to see if I can bring up my phone's acting funny today. So just so you want to read all of it, so I'll read this next part.
Are you sure?
So this
I can
is
read?
Yeah, no, this is verses 13 through 16. I found it now. I've got it now.
Okay.
So this is the sixth angel then sounding its trumpet. So the sixth angel sounded his trumpet, and I heard a voice coming from the four horns of the golden altar that is before God. Now, we've seen a couple of different altars, in my opinion. We've seen the altar of burnt offering, and we've seen the altar of incense. I think this may be going back to the altar of burnt offering, which we saw when we saw the slain saints under the altar. When the fifth seal was opened, I saw the souls of those saints who've been slain because of the word of God under the altar. And so this voice comes from the four corners. And the four corners have to do with directions, cardinal directions. It's mm-hmm. another way to talk about completeness. We've seen the four living creatures that surround the throne of God, for example, one on each side. And so here's from the four horns, the four corners of the altar. And the altar was designed in a way that it had these horns. And in fact, in the Old Testament, one of the ways that you could get sanctuary was to go into the temple and grab hold of the tabernacle and grab hold of the horns of the altar. It was a way to get to safety. So the four horns of the golden altars before God, it said to the sixth angel, the voice did, it said to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. Okay.
The old Euphrates.
So that boundary, right. What were we saying?
I just said the old Euphrates comes back again.
So that boundary water, right, that was seen as kind of the edge of the empire, released those four angels that are on the other side of the Euphrates. And the four angels who had been kept ready for this very hour and day and month and year were released to kill a third of mankind. So this idea, again, I think we're imagining a future invasion is the image that's given. The number of the mounted troops was twice 10,000 times 10,000, which is a lot. We're talking about a massive army. Again, probably not a literal number, but we're talking about, you know, legions of armies. I heard their number, John says. And then verse 17 says, the horses and riders I saw in my vision looked like this. Their breastplates were fiery red, dark blue, and yellow as sulfur. All three of those, so that blue, red, and yellow, all three of those colors, just made me think of a TikTok I saw recently. I may talk about that, I may not. But all these are associated with fire, right, with burning. Mm-hmm. Dark blue, yellow like sulfur, and red, fiery red, all of those have images of fire and smoke, this kind of an idea, which I think, again, is this idea of judgment. I saw a TikTok where a guy was talking about all of the particular nations that had flags that have these three colors, and that's what he says that John is talking about here. I don't necessarily read it that way. I don't think that's what it's referring to. I think this is an image of, again, this fire that he's talked about before. The heads of the horses resembled the heads of lions, and out of their mouth came fire, smoke, and sulfur. So you see the red, mm-hmm. the blue, and the yellow there again. Mm-hmm. Fire, smoke, and sulfur. A third of mankind was killed by the three plagues of fire, smoke, and sulfur. So there again, you have a third
and three
times three, mm-hmm. like I've said, you know, many times. So third fire, third smoke, third sulfur that came out of their mouths. The power of the horses was in their mouths and in their tails. That's what I was referring to earlier, that idea Scythians. of the Scythian shot. For their tails were like snakes having heads with which they inflict injury. So I think he's painting this picture of an invasion and destruction. Goes along, as we talked about, with the first four horsemen. I think that was a good comparison that you made there. But this idea of an invading army, I think, coming in and bringing judgment, bringing damage to the people who are oppressing God's people. Okay, mm-hmm. Thoughts or comments on any of that?
Just a lot of destruction here.
Yeah, and a lot of really interesting images. I mean, you see what I'm saying? It's like the locusts. It's like the army is being described by locusts rather than the locusts being described as an army, I think, is mm-hmm. what's going on. Now, we talked about this 20 and 21 a little bit. Was it last week or two weeks ago?
It was last week. We had a little bit of a conversation about this.
Okay, so I'll read it again. It says, the rest of mankind who were not killed by these plagues still did not repent of the work of their hands. And I talked a lot about this, that I think what we're talking about is the stubbornness or the hardness of hearts that they have toward the message of God. This judgment is not going to bring about repentance. The woes, the warning is not going to bring about repentance, but it is just the idea of the judgment that's coming upon them because of the things that they have done. They did not stop worshiping demons and idols of gold, silver, bronze, stone, and wood, idols that cannot see or hear or walk. This is the irony that Isaiah points out a lot, like in Isaiah chapter 10, for example, that, you know,
we make stuff out of wood. Some of it's for burning. Some of it's an idol, and the other piece is for the fire.
Down to the rest of it, right? Yeah, you cook your pot of beans over half of it, and the other half you bow down and worship. And so it's that kind of an idea. These idols can't. They're ineffective. They can't do anything. They're not like our God, right, who can...
This is Elijah on Mount Carmel.
Exactly.
Maybe Baal is sleeping.
Yeah, yell louder and cut yourself some, and maybe he'll wake up. But yeah, their gods are ineffective, and our God is an active God. Our God is the one who's bringing this judgment. Nor did they repent of their murders, their magic arts, their sexual immorality, or their thefts. And you know, these, it's always interesting when you see these kind of list, you know, the idea of killing and magic arts would have to do, it reminds me again of the Exodus, if you think about the Egyptian magicians. Mm-hmm. But it's magic arts is the attempt to manipulate the world so that it gets you what you want, right? Mm-hmm. I always say the difference between religion and Christianity, or being a follower of the true God, is that we do not manipulate God in order to get him to do what we want. Whereas in quote-unquote religion, often what's happening is it is an attempt to manipulate God to get our way. And instead, what we do as followers of Christ is we submit our will to his. That's what we're doing, right? We're trusting him so that we're able to submit to him, and no matter what comes our way, we trust that it is for the best. It is what God's desire is in us. So this idea, the magic arts, is their attempt to manipulate the world to get what they want. Sexual immorality sometimes goes along with idolatry. If you think of, again, Old Testament images, he will talk about his people sleeping with other gods, right? They're unfaithful to him. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly going to be the thing later on. We've had an episode before about the woman on the Scarlet Beast, the Whore of Babylon. And, you know, she's a whore. She sleeps with, lays down with all of these other nations. And so that sexual immorality can have that idea, or their thefts. And this is the idea of, gathering ill-gotten gain for themselves. And so that's kind of where I plan on leaving off today. We'll deal with chapter 10 and the rest of the woes a little bit next week. But
yeah, all right, Brian. Well, thank you so much for leading us through there. We're almost done with this. We're gonna maybe look at a couple of the last woe then next week.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then we'll be wrapped up with this.
And this mighty angel that comes out of heaven. We got to figure out what that's all about.
Yeah, if you're enjoying the podcast, please let us know. If you got some ideas for us, we're thinking about ideas of what to do next. Maybe a guest you might recommend that we have on to talk about something like that. A book you're reading that's interesting. We would love to hear from you. So if you're a new listener, you've downloaded some stuff, we'd love to hear from you. You can go to thebiblebistro.com. We have a little bookstore on there that has some resources if you're interested in looking at Revelation a little bit more, and some other things are going to be heading up there soon. So appreciate all of you that are listening, and
make sure to share if you value what we're doing here. Make sure to share with others.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Brian, thanks so much, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
See you.